This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. Jerry Palm will also join us, CBS Sports. We'll talk some college basketball. We haven't really touched on college basketball at all. We'll give you a little primer into the final 2 months before March Madness, which is going to be in Indianapolis this year. Ron and I were talking about this yesterday, which was, look, if you're a reporter covering the NCAA tournament, this might be a cool way to do it, because you could go to Indianapolis, you could get a hotel, and then you sort of can, if you're just kind of freelancing, like, I'm going to do a story on this or that, you can sort of pick where you want to go. A lot of games will be in Indianapolis, but some games are going to be in Bloomington, some are going to be in West Lafayette, and it's all an easy drive to get to those locations. So, if you want to hit a Gonzaga game in Bloomington and the next day go see, Iowa play in West Lafayette or wherever it may be, you can totally do that, rather than I got to fly to Spokane and hang out here and only get the games that are in this location. Obviously, fans are not going to be an issue because of COVID-19 and whatnot. And I really do hope that this is not something they do in the future where cities vie for the whole thing. I don't know if sports changes so much post-COVID that we can't go back to having this tournament played around the country. I am kind of fascinated post-COVID if some of the things that we have been seeing in sports changes, right? I mean, just kind of become permanent. Maybe we are doing things a little differently in terms of playoffs, or maybe we're doing things a little differently because of travel. The NHL, for example, is playing, everybody's in a geographical division playing only teams in that division. I wonder if the NHL, that is going through some economic hardship, even post-COVID, would say, for a couple of years, let's really help our teams with the costs of operations. And let's do this where we don't need the Nashville Predators to go to Vancouver. We can just have them play within this geographical region, at least for a couple of years, until we get the finances kind of back up to speed. Look, a lot of these leagues took a lot of money. I mean, it's just lost a lot of money that even when fans go back and we live a lifestyle with somewhat back to normal, I wonder if some of the changes that have been made in sports actually kind of affect and stay put just to help financially the rebirth of some of these organizations. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next. And then we'll talk about why Jeremy Pruitt's firing is a little different next.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it is the good, the bad, and the dumb here on a Wednesday, the midweek portion of the program. What is the good of the day, Mr. Culver?
I don't know why when we get to Wednesday, but it happens routinely when there's just so much good to sift through.
Yeah, all right.
That I can't get to it all. Like, I'm not going to be able to get to Sarah Thomas.
The referee for the Super Bowl.
First female referee to officiate in a Super Bowl.
That's pretty good.
We're not going to have time for that. Because I have two goods that one is makes you feel good. The other one is just awesome.
All right.
Yeah, the first one being Delonte West. Remember him?
Yep, saw this story.
Former NBA guard. Well, yep. He is, he was picked up off the street. We remember he was picked up off the street by Mark Cuban after photos of him surfaced of him panhandling in Dallas. Mark Cuban made it a mission to go out and find him, try to get him back on his way. And by all accounts, it looks like it worked out because now he's got a job at a rehab center that he once attended.
Wow! That's good for him.
So I'm not sure what his job is. Maybe just a coach that's like, hey, this happened to me, it could happen to you type of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. But the fact is that it looks like his life is under, he's reconnected with his mother. So I don't think we will be seeing Delonte West panhandling anymore. Hopefully.
Yeah, that's great. Good. And this is where Mark Cuban sort of stepped in and sort of helped him out. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. All right. So the second good of the day.
This story I just absolutely love. There's a restaurant owner. He owns a Chinese restaurant. He's over in England, in London. And he leaves brutally honest reviews of his own dishes on the menu.
Oh, nice. So he, oh, really?
So he will say things like, you know, the orange chicken, not so good compared to the General Tao chicken.
Yeah, that's pretty bold.
Or,
I like that.
Or it's your call when ordering the Singapore noodles. Not so tasty, but a safe choice.
That's actually decent. You know what he's doing? He's trying to narrow like his menu down. He's like, I want to have a large menu, a lot of different items, but I really only want to cook like six or seven dishes.
Right.
So I'm trying to get so somebody looks, I like orange chicken. Oh, it's not as good as General Tso's. I guess I'll take the General Tso's. Thanks.
Yeah.
And he's probably in the back going, cool, I don't have to make orange chicken.
I mean, he's really high on his potato dishes.
Okay, that's good.
You know, so, I mean, if you're going to go to this restaurant, have the potato dish. He, you know, there's like, you know, like a mouth-watering chicken. He said was very well known. We are not 100% satisfied with the flavor now. And it will get better really soon. Our Sichuan pepper chicken salad is better.
Oh, very good.
When it comes to his imperial rolls, he says they're good, but it's a small portion.
Awesome. Yeah, good for him. That's
great. So we just kind of, you know, gotta like the, you know, the honesty. I mean, there's another dish. He says, I haven't really tried it yet, so I can't really leave a review. So I should eat in my restaurant.
We were at a restaurant about a month ago, right before the holidays, and it was a new restaurant we'd never been to before. And I asked the waiter about this dish, and he goes, you don't want that. And I thought to myself, that's great. How many times have you gone to a place, you're like, hey, how's your steak? And they go, oh, the best steak in the world. And this guy literally was like, no, you don't want that. It's not one of our better dishes.
Yeah.
He was literally like honest. And I appreciated that. He didn't just go, everything's great here. He was like, no, we don't really hit a home run with that one. And I go, that's fantastic. I kind of like this guy's approach to this.
Yeah. I mean, like it's this. Right there on the menu. So you can't. You can't go to any type of review site, like a Yelp or something like that, and say, oh, yeah. You know, this dish is this, and this dish is that. He's like, nah, it's right here on the menu.
That's
I told
good.
You.
Good for him.
He even told you the ones I haven't tried myself, and it's my restaurant.
No. Even better. All right, so what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is also the dumb of the day.
Oh, we're doing double duty?
I had to combine the two because I couldn't find a more terrible story.
Okay.
All right. This happened in Oregon. A guy steals a car, turns around, finds that there's a four-year-old in the back seat of the car. So he does the responsible thing. He turns around, heads back to the store, drops off the four-year-old to the mother, who had just ran into like a little convenience store to get a gallon of milk.
Why are you still leaving a four-year-old in the car when you do that?
See, that's where, you know, that's why I'm combining bad and dumb into this whole story. So he returns to this convenience store, drops off the kid, chastises the mother.
Of course he should.
And then takes off with the car again.
I'm trying to do just basic criminals here, basic crimes here.
Yeah.
Stealing a car, which eventually you'll just get your insurance check. But I'm not kidnapping a baby
or
a child.
Throwing that on top of me.
No, no. We are not doing that.
I don't need the heat.
Exactly.
From, you know, cops. Because cops will respond quicker to a four-year-old
of
missing
course.
Than to, you know, a... It was a, I don't know what year it was, but it was a Honda Pilot.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, Honda Pilots are everywhere. Hondas are everywhere.
You ever had your car stolen?
I've never had my car stolen.
Let
I've
me
had
just
my
tell
car
you.
Broken into, though.
Okay, let me just tell you this. I had my car stolen years ago, early 90s in South Carolina, visiting my friend from college. You know that scene in The Big Lebowski where Jeff Lebowski has his car stolen? He asks the cops, do you have any leads?
Yeah.
And they laugh at him like leads. That's exactly what you get when you go pick up your car and you ask, like, do you know who did this? They're like, you just got your car, man. What do you want?
Well,
what do you want?
That
we found it in a parking lot at a Walmart. Like, what do you want from us?
Well, that happened to my mom. My mom had had a rental car because her car was in the shop. The rental car was stolen. They had a security camera footage showing the thieves breaking into the car and stealing the car. They found the car down the street, and the cops were just like, you found the car. What do you want? It's the rental car's problem now, not ours.
Yeah. Yeah, they were like,
you know, these are thieves. They, you know, they're running through the neighborhood. They could do it again. When they do it, we'll try to catch them.
Everything in my car was taken out, probably pawned. Yeah. The radio was taken out, probably whatever. And they left the car in a parking lot, and the cops were like, take your car home. What do you want? We're not. There's no detective that is wiping for prints on your stolen vehicle. Yeah. But if that car had a four-year-old baby in it or four-year-old child
they're
in
running.
It, they're running. They're canvassing the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You're looking for that child.
Calling an FBI.
Yeah, that guy is correct. That guy who stole that car is correct. He can probably get away with stealing the car.
Yes.
He could strip it down. For whatever reason he needs it, he just leaves it wherever. Like, if he needs to get from point A to point B, he'd probably get away with it. But stealing a baby or child, I keep saying baby, but he's four years old. Four-year-old child, no. That's it. Yeah, you're right. Don't add that on top of me.
No.
Drive that car back, drop off the baby. Get back in the car and take the car for a ride.
I wish there was a footage of him yelling.
I would love to have seen that.
I would love to hear
this criminal yelling at a mother for going into a convenience or leaving her child in the car. That would be hysterical.
You know, dropping the kid off, you know, doing this, doing that, and then jumping back in the car and taking off again.
Yeah. Literally, you could go, here are two people. This woman left this child in this vehicle while she ran into this store. This guy is stealing this car to... Which one do you dislike more?
Right.
And everybody would point to the woman.
To the mother.
For leaving that child in the car.
Yeah. Hey, there's big car thieves forever. It's almost it's a side gig.
Exactly.
Really, when you look at it.
Exactly. Good for that guy, though.
Guy's just trying to make some money. If you have insurance, you're fine. Don't worry about it.
Exactly. Remember, it's like in the Hollywood movies when the bank robbers go into a bank.
What's the first thing they always say?
First say, we don't want your money, we want the bank's money. Yours is insured. They try to clear the air, at least in Hollywood. They clear the air by making sure people realize you're getting your money back.
Well, we know Hollywood's real life.
I'm taking the money from this vault, but you guys are okay, so don't do anything stupid. We're just taking this cash and leaving, and then you fill out the paperwork, and the government will pay you back what we take.
In fact, you won't have to pay you back. The bank won't even take the money out of your account.
Right, exactly. They'll just leave it there.
The bank will get the money back. They'll get the money back. You're fine.
It's funny. I have no idea how that works, and I just pretended like I knew how it worked.
Oh, come on. Yeah, we know you've knocked off a bank or two.
That's amazing.
But when you were knocking off that bank, you didn't leave a child in the car.
No, it did not leave a child in the car.
Not
no way.
You would have brought the kid in with you like a responsible parent should.
Exactly. Exactly. I kind of think, like, listen, again, you're right. You're that guy is so right. There is just certain crimes that if you just, the police, there's just not enough manpower to sort of go after some smaller stuff that's just going to be washed, you know, kind of washed through insurance. But kidnapping, that's very criminal smart of that guy to go, oh, no.
Yeah.
No. I'm not taking this baby. And I'm not taking the baby and dropping him off.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, I'm not dropping him off at, like, the next block and just leaving him on the sidewalk. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I'm taking the baby back to the mother, and I'm not getting anywhere near this. Good for him.
I don't want that on my...
Why did I just praise a criminal who stole a car? Well,
that's what I'm saying. This is that's why I fit into the bad and the dumb. Because it's a little bit of both. We're all, you know, and it could be reflected on us. And we're like, you know, great on that thief.
Right.
Great on the carjacker.
That's where this story is going. I'm feeling more proud of the thieves' motivations than I should.
I mean, if this was a holiday movie, you're pulling for the villain.
You're pulling for the villain, right? Exactly.
Like, this is a villain with a heart of gold.
Amazing. Amazing. All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. All right. Coming up, Jeremy Pruitt had been fired from Tennessee on Monday. But what exactly goes on in college athletics that allows others to stay for the same stuff? Next, as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. The professional parts people will help you navigate their wide selection to find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will even install those wiper blades free of charge. See better, drive safer with new wiper blades at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Yesterday, I was talking about Tennessee firing Jeremy Pruitt for recruiting violations. Now it's being reported that recruits got money in McDonald's bags. I don't know if that's true or not. That's what we're kind of hearing. Who knows? These things have a life of their own. It doesn't really matter. These are pretty egregious and enough. 10 people on the football staff lost their job at Tennessee. But let's be honest, shall we, about these kind of things? There isn't any outrage from the fan base when these occur. We talk about this all the time, and we're going to bring it up again because it is worth being said. Will Wade at LSU still has a job. Bill Self at Kansas is still coaching Kansas. When you win and you put your team in a successful situation, you can ride some of this stuff out. Jeremy Pruitt, this is a reason to let a guy go who has not lived up to expectations when you hear a story about bags of cash giving out to recruits. There is a hierarchy here that a lot of people don't quite get. When there are recruiting violations that occur, there are two things that are going to happen to the head coach. There are two things that are going to cause problems with the head coach. Either one, and this is basketball and football. One, the head coach knew about it, turned a blind eye to it, let it happen, possibly encouraged it to happen, and therefore is ultimately responsible for the violations that are going to be coming to that organization. Two, the assistant coaches and the recruiting coordinators and everybody underneath the head coach do it without the knowledge of the head coach, do it behind his back so that there is a level of plausible deniability when the head coach is asked about this, and he can claim ignorance, not knowing what his staff is doing. And that gets him in trouble too, because he's supposed to know what's going on with his staff. This happened to Rick Pitino at Louisville. Right, where, you know, recruits are strippers are coming in to entertain recruits, and Rick Pitino claimed he didn't know about it. But in the end, you have to know about these things. You need to know about these things, especially when people on your staff are responsible for the well-being of high school kids. Right? So when you send your son to a school to go see a campus, to go see if that would be a great place for him to play football or basketball, that the staff is going to properly take care of your child. And if that doesn't take place, right, the head coach, whether he knows about these improprieties or not, is ultimately responsible. But Jeremy Pruitt had that third thing going against him, which is Tennessee was not a good football team. All right, now people, we can sort of blow this off as simplistic. He was let go because Tennessee is now in trouble, but it doesn't help his case that he doesn't have a very good record there. Tennessee this season, they closed out 2019 on a nice little run of wins. There was a lot of expectation that 2020 would be a continuation of that. And they started off strong, winning the first two games of the year. Then they fell apart. There hasn't been a big-time quarterback coming in the program. Recruiting class has been middle of the road. They're not a good football team. They're about sixth in the SEC. That's terrible for a program like Tennessee that puts a lot of money and resources into its program. They're seeing the dynamic shift. It is turning, believe it or not, it is turning into sort of a basketball. It's not a basketball school because football is always king in the SEC, but their bread and butter is turning into men's basketball. The women's basketball team has had success with Pat Summitt. They're kind of ranked in the top 25 now, but the football team is just becoming average, mediocre, where literally even when they play a team, like Kentucky, middle of the road SEC team like South Carolina, you're not 100% sure they're going to win that game, where you are when it comes to some other programs within that conference. But you look at college basketball, right? What we just had an FBI investigation into the sport. What happened with that? Where was the big, this is going to rock college basketball to the core? What happened to that? Our good friend Will Wade at LSU is still coaching LSU.
I love that.
Right? Still coaching LSU. Still. This guy, it's not even like, well, did he or didn't he? They know he committed recruiting violations. He's caught on tape, and he still has a gig.
Guess it wasn't the right tape?
Right, exactly.
He didn't say the trigger word?
Why? Because LSU's a good team. Now, they got rolled last night by Alabama, but they got a good basketball team. And 2 years ago when this scandal started breaking, they had a really good basketball team. So let's be honest here, right? You can survive some of these things if you're really good and, more importantly, powerful. Look, sometimes you get taken down. Rick Pitino got taken down. But in the end, you sort of have to dissect the crimes here, right? When we talked about this yesterday, There may come a day where bags and, you know, money in McDonald's bags is a laughable thing, right? When we look back and go, can you believe we all got worked up paying recruits money under the table? Now we're just openly promising them money. We may come to a point in that where that conversation has taken place, where the evolution of recruiting goes to more and more benefits that are just out in the open. And the best example that I've come up with is, there are two examples that I've come up with, is marijuana and gambling, right? Gambling was, we'll never have it in our state.
No.
Now every state is dying to have sports books.
There's only two places it could exist.
Right. Atlantic City and Las Vegas.
Yep.
Right. And even Atlantic City, I don't know if the sports betting was allowed there, but I'm not 100% sure. But Vegas, definitely. Now, when I lived in Vegas, I remember the arguments for expansion of gambling, right? Because people always make it like you couldn't get a team to Las Vegas because these leagues were like, no, we're not going to Las Vegas. We're never going to put an NBA team in Las Vegas. Are you crazy? It's gambling. We can't be around gambling. Now these leagues embrace it. And the argument was always, well, you don't understand. These sportsbooks monitored the kind of thing you're worried about, the fixing of games. Sportsbooks pay real close attention to this. That's how Arizona State went down. They started noticing that the Arizona State trends were not normal. They were way out of whack. And they were the ones that notified the FBI that something was amiss. This was probably mid-90s, I think. And now look around. Every state wants a piece of this. Every state wants to do this. Marijuana the same way. The gateway drug, right? Well, never should be legal. Never should be illegal. Now every state. Now leagues are starting to put together collective bargaining agreements where it's not even tested.
NBA already passed it.
NBA already passed it. The NFL should do it. We've been yelling for this for years. The NFL should do it. I guarantee you it's going to be within 5 years, if not sooner, none of them will test for it, and nobody will be punished for using it. No one, right? Because there's been just this level of acceptability. There's just going to be this level of acceptability with recruiting, too. There may come a day where we go, can you believe you had to put cash in McDonald's bags and hand it to recruits to get them to come play for you? And now there might be contracts, for crying out loud, to get a recruit to play. Who knows where it's heading? But I think the underlying issue with what went on in Tennessee is, if Tennessee really wanted, if Jeremy Pruitt was the next Lincoln Riley, if Jeremy Pruitt was an up-and-coming coach that had Tennessee in the playoff, Dabo Sweeney, right, had recruiting through the roof, top five at Rivals.com, he would survive this, absolutely survive this. Because Rick Pitino couldn't survive it, because in the end there's a moralistic aspect to what happened at Louisville that I think as a school you can't get behind. No, we should not forgive a coaching staff that brought strippers to 17-year-old kids. Right? We told these parents we'd take care of their kids, and we brought them strippers. No, we have to let the people go. But there is just this feeling about, yeah, well, just, you know, it's recruiting. You promise things, you deliver things, and, you know, in the end, it happens all the time. That you can survive. Will Wade is surviving it. Bill Self is surviving it. I mean, the list of successful coaches who've had tarnishes on their resume is long, and they continue to either A, be at the school that they're at, or B, get right back into coaching as soon as they are let go. Right? When Iona hired Rick Pitino, I remember saying, good. You're right? Why not?
Yeah,
maybe
he
learned a lesson. What, you know? What, maybe? So?
He didn't hand out money in McDonald's bags.
And I kept going, you think Rick Pitino is going to be out of college basketball for the rest of his life? Are you crazy?
Not for that.
You have any idea how this works? All right, maybe North Carolina doesn't give him a job if Roy Williams stepped down. Or another, but Iona absolutely is going to go, sure, come on over. Absolutely, that's how it works. And Jeremy Pruitt is going to get a coaching job somewhere, probably as a defensive assistant at some other school. He's going to land on his feet somewhere. But a lot of what happened at Tennessee is not some moral outrage. It is about getting rid of a guy and not having to pay him out because he's not a very good football coach right now. And he's not delivered the glory that Tennessee wants. Jerry Palm next, talking college hoops as we continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, we haven't done a primer for the college basketball season when it started, but now seems to be a good time as we're getting, about 2 months away from March Madness. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Jerry Palm joins us, CBS Sports. Talk some college hoops. How are you, Jerry?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. We ask this a lot during college football, and with college basketball, games are being postponed every night. Villanova hasn't played in a while. How difficult has it been to sort of get an ebb and flow to this season?
Yeah, it's been hard for sure. For the teams playing, you know, you shut your program down for a couple of weeks and you can't even practice. It's hard to keep much of a rhythm. And among the higher-rated teams in college basketball, Villanova is the most prominent that's dealt with this for a prolonged length of time. I think they're coming back this week, so we should see the Wilds. Oh, actually, they played last night and won. They beat Seton Hall, so they are back now.
But
it's been difficult. There are certainly some programs that have had to deal with this, and there's going to be more. I've got my current list is in the mid-40s, the number of teams that have had to cancel at least their most recent game, if not more.
In terms of, like, we in football, we were debating what would this mean for a four-team playoff, but because of 68 teams, is it still could it still be a problem when the committee comes together to create the bracket?
It can be in some regards. I don't know how much the committee is going to be able to take games canceled into account. They can only judge you on what you've done, not what you might have been able to do, or, you know, they can't base your strength of schedule on games you didn't play. That'll still be true. It's just that this year they've got more of those games out there, games that weren't getting played or got postponed, or, you know, teams in unusual situations that they might, you know, consider, because they do consider the circumstances that teams play games under, but those circumstances seem to be, you know, universal this year, affecting everybody in some way, maybe some in more ways than others. But it'll be interesting to see what the committee does. But I don't think you're going to see things like teams a game above 500 making the tournament unless they've played some kind of ridiculous schedule. But you know, normally it would be like four games above 500 is what it would take to get you in the tournament. This year you might see teams get in fewer than four games just because you've got fewer games played.
So Duke is out of the top 25. I was racking my brain to try to figure out last time Duke struggled. I thought it was like the Krzyzewski back injury days, but I can't really remember. But what has gone on with the Blue Devils? Why are they not playing particularly well?
Well, they haven't played particularly much. I mean, that's another program that I think that was, they still haven't played 10 games. They're 5-4 now. So I think part of it is just lack of, you know, a rhythm, lack of playing. But part of it might just be that they're not as good as people thought they were.
Yeah.
They haven't beaten anybody of note. What's the kid's name? Johnson, I think, had a big night last night. So maybe that, you know, can bode well for their future if they can play around him. But so far, they just haven't been able to find any kind of a rhythm. The better teams they've played, which are not numerous, have all beaten them. They just haven't been able to get on the right foot yet, but there's still 2 months to go. And if they can, you know, play, you know, now without interruption for a while, maybe they can get a rhythm going.
The ACC overall, there's Virginia, there's Virginia Tech, there's Clemson. They're all in the top 25. Overall as a conference, one of the stronger conferences we see year in and year out for college basketball. It's a small sample size. I get it. But what's the early feeling on that conference?
Yeah, well, last year was a down year. Then they didn't get to obviously have an NCAA tournament where you would have seen, you know, fewer teams and seeded lower than we're used to from the ACC. But I think that'll be the case again this year. Virginia just got their first win of the season that mattered at all. The 35-point drubbing of Clemson, so a pretty impressive win nonetheless. But that was their first quality win at all. They haven't even played really very many good teams this year. Virginia Tech has been pretty good. Virginia, Clemson, like you say, but I don't have any of those teams seated above a four in my current bracket. Plenty of time to go, almost 2 months till Selection Sunday. So a lot can change, but there just doesn't seem to be a strong contender in that league this year. And the ACC has had quite a few games postponed. And so they've been among the major conferences probably the most impacted by COVID-related postponements. So that could be part of whatever problem the league is having.
A team that popped out to me and has been popping out, especially last night, is Alabama. That was a 30-point win against a good LSU team. 23 three-pointers in a 40-minute game? I mean, what is Nate Oates doing down there?
Well, you know, that's going to be, we're going to call that an above-average night.
Yeah, I got you,
For Alabama. I'm willing to bet that's their season high for three-pointers. that's just one of those nights where everything's going right and there isn't a whole lot LSU can do about it at that point. I mean, you can only, I guess you could put all five defenders on the 3-point line, but then you're giving up layups too. So I just it's just one of those days where you shake their hand and get ready for the next day. And Alabama's probably got an 0-for-15 coming. To make up for that at some point. We've seen a lot of surprisingly high margin games. And I wonder if some of that might not be COVID related or rhythm, the lack of a rhythm due to COVID things going on where you just, even last night, Tennessee, a top 10 team, got crushed at Florida.
Exactly.
Virginia beat Clemson by 35. I mean, it seems like everybody's got a game like that or is getting to the point where we have everybody has a game like that where you just lay an egg. And we won't see it from Gonzaga because they've been through the better part of their schedule and now they're in their league. But, Kansas got smoked by Texas at home. It's some ridiculously high margins in games that have gotten away from teams that are otherwise very good. And that's kind of been a surprise.
Baylor off to an unbeaten start, number two in the nation. I thought losing Freddie Gillespie would hurt them a little bit, but again, I know we're still got 2 months left in the season, but how national championship worthy is Baylor?
Oh, totally. It just feel like we kind of got robbed of one of the great anticipated matchups in preseason, pre-conference season college basketball when the Baylor-Gonzaga game had to be postponed, well, ultimately canceled. So maybe we'll get it in March or April, but that's an outstanding team. And when they got Butler back, instead of going pro, I think that was huge for them because he's a player of the year candidate, outstanding player. And I just think it was a big boost to them because they've got a lot of other very good pieces, obviously. But getting him back and not losing him to the NBA, I thought was huge.
What's your take, Jerry? We're talking to Jerry Palm of CBS Sports. There's a media angle to it, and there's a fan side to it, where the NCAA tournament will be in Indiana. What are your thoughts on one state, one locale? COVID probably is it is the main reason for it, and it facilitates that decision. But is it good to be all confined in one area?
Well, I think it is for to try and get a tournament played in a COVID environment because what you've done is you've reduced travel. So everybody goes to one spot. They're not going to, places one weekend and then the next weekend and then the next weekend and going back and forth from home and all of that. They're just in one spot. You go, when you lose, you go home. And that's all your travel. And I think that it's not going to be a pure bubble like the NBA had, but it's going to be as close as they can to accommodate that many teams. And I think it's as safe as they can, an environment that they can create to play this tournament. Indianapolis is very well equipped to host an event like this. They're going to play some of the early games at Mackey Arena at Purdue, which is about an hour north, and at IU's Assembly Hall, about an hour south. But everything else will be in Indianapolis, and I think it's going to be great to get the tournament in, to play it in that environment. That's not something you want to do every year because you want to spread the wealth around the country when it comes and, make it geographically easy for more teams. But for this, situation, I think this is the best they could do.
We're catching you early. We've still got 2 months left, but one question that arises late in the season as we head into the tournament is mid-majors. How are mid-majors doing so far?
Well, there are a few that are doing pretty well. Winthrop, I believe, is still undefeated. Drake is still undefeated in the Missouri Valley. So you've got a couple of teams that are standing out. The Mountain West could put three or four teams in the tournament this year. Boise State and Utah State are playing well. So I don't know how many of these teams we're seeing in the top 25. Probably not. But and I don't know. It's what we don't have is like some of the bigger non-conference games where the teams like this could really show themselves.
Yeah.
Because so many non-conference games, we're only playing about 42% of the non-conference schedule that we would normally play in terms of the number of games. So these teams may not really fully get a chance to prove themselves until we get to March. I may not get seeded as well as they would normally get until, you know, because of the lack of ability to prove themselves outside the league. But yeah, there's definitely going to be teams that are dangerous in that part of the bracket.
Jerry, always good talking to you, my friend, and we'll try to catch up with you later on as the season gets more and more under our belt.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
You got it. Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, talking some college basketball. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Court Explorer, only at progressive.com. Interesting point about rhythm. That might be Duke's problem right now, is that they never really got off to a rhythm, but they're still Duke. I mean, you expect they bring in good talent. They have a great coach who can, you know, utilize that talent. And right now they're just kind of struggling and right, kind of just middle of the road. But, you know, we kind of looked at the beginning of the season, and the beginning of the college basketball season is where you get the Maui Invitational and you get all these other kind of tournaments, and some of them went down and some of them had to be canceled. But there is a feeling like you can get things organized with your team before you step into conference play and then roll along. College football does it with just a couple of games, maybe to kick off the season. Some are good matchups, some are cupcakes, but then you realize where the bread and butter is, and that is playing within your conference. And some of these tournaments that were committed to years ago, teams just sort of had to pull out and sort of scramble. But Villanova just coming back after being off, they were off before Christmas. I think it was the 23rd of December, their last game that they played. So how do you evaluate properly these teams where you're getting to see them and then you're not seeing them for a while, then you're seeing them again? It's a little difficult, but it's not as imperative as what we were talking about in college football, where we're talking about four teams. We have a big expanded tournament here. And again, I think that still plays out that if you still can't get into this thing, stoppage of play, non-stoppage of play, rhythm, no rhythm, whatever the reason for your failures in this season, I still think it is on you to try to get into this tournament. All right, coming up, we'll continue our look, a quick look at the championship weekend in the NFL as we finish up the hour on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call. And this hour of Wake Up Call is brought to you by the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Squares Sweepstakes. See rules to enter for free today at rocketmortgagesquares.com. We just got breaking news. Philip Rivers retiring after 17 seasons. Just came down. This is the least surprising breaking news that we've had on the show in a while.
But I will say this, though. It's a bold move for Philip Rivers to want to go home to nine kids.
Right. This was his opportunity to be away for a while for his own peace of mind.
When he was playing for the San Diego / LA Chargers, he still returned home after practice. I can't imagine that he did that, because then he moved the family to Tampa.
He moved the family to Florida. Yeah, somewhere in Florida, right.
So there's no way he was commuting back and forth every day from Indianapolis. I mean, that's a lot of peace and quiet to give up.
His wife was probably like on the phone every night. You talk to these kids. I'm done. I'm done with these. What are you doing? What are you talking about?
After that final playoff game, he probably walked through the door and she's like, yeah, you're done.
Yeah, you're done.
You're done. You're not going back.
No. We're not doing this again. You are not doing this again.
Not leaving me with nine kids at home.
Remember I told you I created that saying with my kids when they were little, I don't want justice, I want peace. Like, what is his line for nine children to come up with? Like, I had two kids. Like, when my two kids fought, right, it was between two kids. With nine kids, you could have six kids fighting, eight kids fighting. You could have all nine fighting. You could have five fighting. How do they process that? I would stay playing football until I was 50.
Yeah, he has nine kids.
I would jump into coaching.
I just had to look it up real quick because I never really knew.
Nine children, that's unbelievable.
I never really knew this, but they range in age from the youngest being 1 year old all the way up to the oldest being 18.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, so this is like a Walton situation,
yeah.
Right? Well, you had John Boy as sort of the adult, but then you had Mary Ellen, who was the little kid type getting
you
in trouble.
You have a lot really close together, though.
Right, of course.
Because you got 18, and then you got 15, 14, 12, 10, 8, 6, 4, 1.
Nine children. Well done, Philip Rivers.
And out of that, only two boys.
Well, Hall of Fame, real quick. I don't know. Yeah. When people ask me, I'm not sure. Here's why I always say this. I don't know, only because if there is a tight criteria, the NFL's got it. Those writers are really tight with getting in like, whereas others might be a little loose.
Recently, I felt like they were just allowing everybody in for the longest period of time. Maybe it's because
Art Monk took forever.
I know, but I think it's because, you know, they always have like five people as opposed to the Major League Baseball. Like, we'll do none.
Floyd Little was fantastic, and they had a whole campaign to get them to pay attention. I think Rivers could get in. He's got all these numbers. He's fifth in passing. Yeah. But the Super Bowls matter. I mean, they do. I mean, you can say he just came along during a Brady-Patriot run, but it matters. And I think that's the pullback is that he never got them to that promised land.
Yeah, and you know me, I'm going to be biased on this situation.
Yeah, but if you play 17 years at that level, you might have a chance.